And we are back. You're listening to Your Health Connection on WCLK 91.9 FM. We are here talking about brain cancer. What is it? How do you survive it? How do you treat it? Dr. Shoma, can you maybe speak to what health disparities look like as far as this disease is concerned?
Well, unfortunately, a lot of patient populations, depending on their sort of ethnic backgrounds, are sort of influenced by their cultural belief systems, whether to seek help on time or not. And this can also delay treatment rather than open up avenues for people. And in the United States, of course, there have been lots of examples of certain minorities being tested on, and so this concept of clinical trials becomes a scary concept to them. Whereas, as both Dr. Dunbar and Beth mentioned, clinical trials are an open discussion. And nowadays, you just do not take individuals and put them in a study. And you have to answer to a lot of ethical committees and institutional committees as to why you're doing the study. So the health disparities that we see, where certain populations are not getting access to healthcare, is another issue. And it is very important that everybody can get access that they deserve.
I appreciate you mentioning that. That is definitely a big one. There are people who don't have access to healthcare, but I'm appreciative of the Center for Cancer Research and Therapeutic Development and the hospitals and you all certainly, because the more we talk about it, the more I think that fear goes away for people. The more that we do the show with survivors' stories such as Beth's, the more people say, okay, well, maybe I can do this. Maybe it's not that bad. We're all women in here, but I wanted to find out, is there a difference between this particular disease for women as opposed to men? Is there any research on that that shows that it's more prevalent in one gender than another?
So if you look at the statistics, it's just a smidge higher in women than men, and very negligibly so. And it depends on what type of brain cancer one is referring to as well. As for survival outcomes, it really depends, as Beth mentioned, on the sort of outlook that the individual has. And that could be, if you sort of have a very defeatist, negative outlook, and that can be influenced by the physicians that you see up front, then your prognosis might be influenced by that. Whereas if you're somebody who has had good care and has gone to cancer-designated centers, they're going to get more support, not only in terms of the clinicians, but everybody else. Our social workers do a fantastic job in finding ways to get people who don't have the resources to treatments, from housing to being able to afford the next round of chemotherapy and to be able to provide participate in trials fairly.
Dr. Dunbar, can you speak more to the support system resources?
She said that beautifully, and I think that encouraging patients that may have a brain tumor or encouraging their loved ones to get them to a place that specializes in brain tumor care, there are two main messages we want everyone listening to hear. One is that there are absolutely more treatments and more improved outcomes than ever before. So there is evidence-based hope. There is authentic hope for people feeling better and doing much better longer than ever before. And the second major message is that going to a brain tumor center, whether Piedmont Brain Tumor Center or Emory Winship Cancer Center or others, is the moment we are able to touch the life of that uninsured patient or well-insured patient, no matter who they are. We look for the ways to optimize their health care. So sometimes we get a diagnosis of a tumor and rapidly go into trying to get them emergency Medicaid to be able to use that diagnosis to get them the resources and the treatment they need. And those types of things can be done faster and more robustly in a larger center or hospital institution.
Well said. Thank you.
And from a patient perspective, I know that clinical trials are scary, were scary to me because I didn't know how much they cost. You know, to me, it was always, I don't know that I can afford one.
Right.
And it's actually the reverse. Usually when you're on a clinical trial, they're paying for all the trial medicines. You're just paying for your standard of care. So if you have a regular doctor's appointment, you know, so it's not an additional cost. And another thing that was news to me as a patient was the NIH. I didn't really understand what the NIH was,
okay,
the National Institute of Health. And I actually went up there for one of my surgeries to seek a clinical trial. They were doing a very novel trial. I think it was going to be patient number one on a CAR T cell. Dr. Dunbar probably knows which trial I'm talking about because she helped me find it. But so in that case, I was not billed one dime. I had doctor's appointments. I had scans. I had surgery.
Wow.
I had follow-up. But you'll never receive a bill from the NIH. And so if your insurance plan doesn't cover treatment that you want, you know, that's a wonderful resource and
excellent,
a place to go look.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Are you, Beth, do you go around and speak on behalf of any particular place? Do you speak to particular groups or churches or functions?
I'll speak to whoever will let me because I really want people to know there is hope, even when you are giving a prognosis that you can't swallow. There's so much more out there. And I think if you go into just, you know, your local doctor's office and they don't treat patients with your diagnosis day in, day out, they may not be aware of everything that's out there.
Right.
And if you can pause and I think, like Dr. Shum said, speak to other patients with your diagnosis, see what they've learned,
right,
and really get that list of questions to ask. And probably, you know, at least once a week, somebody with cancer, you know, finds me and said, did you really survive GBM? You know, my mother has it. What do I do? And I think whether it's GBM or another type of cancer, one thing I encourage them to do immediately is to go on the internet and look to see the national nonprofits for your type of cancer. And if you go to their website, usually there's a guidance tab. And you go under that guidance tab and it'll say steps, you know, questions to ask your doctor. And you can usually get a wonderful list of questions there. You can also usually contact that national nonprofit and they will help you seek out clinical trials.
Nice. I want to ask one more question before we close. There's a group of people, millennials, that are within a certain age range that I think, insofar as I know, consider cancer, any type, to be their parents' disease, or, you know, that's not me, that's not going to happen to me. Is there some advice that you have for young people between the ages of 18 to 35 to say, hey, do this, you probably shouldn't do this, or just look into this so that it doesn't become something else? Either Dr. Sharma?
So as Dr. Dunbar and Beth said, lifestyle choices are very important. So no smoking and don't even consider taking up smoking would be an important message that I would like to get across.
I would like to add to that, there are certain tumors that arise in adolescent and young adults. Testicular cancer would be an example. Some types of lymphomas would be another. Or thirdly, melanoma skin cancer is becoming more common in young adults. But to add to what was just said, listening to your body, following up on symptoms, and starting young adult health wellness, getting your eyes checked, going to the primary care, going to the dentist, is critical to making sure that people are getting age-appropriate cancer and wellness screening. In addition to cancer, we're finding people are having diabetes or heart diseases, young millennials. So I couldn't speak more to listening to your body and checking in with physicians to get age-appropriate cancer screening.
Thank you. Beth.
I always say, you know, I've got three kids, so I worry about them.
Yes.
Is this genetic, you know? And from my research, it sounds like about 70% of cancers are actually, they can attribute to not genetic factors, but more towards lifestyle, whether it's, you know, exposure to toxins or smoking or sun damage or radiation or, you know, chemicals in the food we eat, the clothes we wear. So I always tell my kids, you got one body, take care of it. You know, it's not a car. You can't go purchase a new one.
Right.
So Beth brings up an excellent point to draw us back to, I think, the true value of being part of a large brain tumor center or any type of center that serves the cancer that you've been touched by, because familial and genetic counseling is a very big part of wellness centers. So nutrition, massage, therapy, counseling, but screening for potential familial and genetic disorders that may be running in you or someone else. So we take care of patients that have lower grade tumors or slower growing tumors for which we can identify a potential genetic penetrance that saves the lives of their family members. How satisfying is that? Very, very satisfying to us. But we need to do that in a center that has the time and the resources to think that way.
I totally concur with Dr. Dunbar, and I work very closely with the Children's Healthcare of Atlanta neuro-oncologists, and they've recently joined the Pediatric Brain Tumor Consortium, and we are constantly thinking of ways to rethink the way we do clinical trials, because there are mutations that we can target that are not only found in adults, but they're found in children. So instead of saying this clinical trial is for this age group, opening it up to the mutation.
Thank you so much to everyone who was here today. Beth, thank you so much for being here. Dr. Shoma, thank you. Dr. Dunbar, thank you. You mentioned hope. You mentioned attitude. And I think all of those things play a part in who we are and what we do. We want to remind you to take ownership of your health and take ownership of your lifestyle. Get checked, get tested regularly, so you can be treated and you can live and live well. Thanks for listening to Your Health Connection on WCLK 91.9 FM. I'm Patty Walden. Good night.
Hello, I am Dr. Shafiq Khan, Director of the Center for Cancer Research and Therapeutic Development at Clark Atlanta University. The Cancer Center is committed to reducing the burden of prostate cancer health disparities in the African American community through research, outreach, and education. On behalf of the Cancer Center, I would like to thank you for joining us today on Your Health Connection.
Your Health Connection is made possible by funding from the National Institutes of Health and the Center for Cancer Research and Therapeutic Development at Clark Atlanta University. For more information, please call 404-880-6878 or go to ccrtd.cau.edu. If you would like to listen to this show on demand, just go to wclk.com and click on the Your Health Connection page. For Patty Walden and producers Dr. Kimberly Davis and Rob Maynard, this is Jamal Ahmed. Thanks for listening to Your Health Connection.